Blog Talk Radio. Wake up, yeah. Wake up, yeah. Wake up, yeah. Wake up, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It don't matter. Yeah, yeah. What race, creed, or color. Everybody, we need each other. Wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backward thinking. Time for thinking ahead.
Happening on the political front that have open conversation and sharing of information. We want to filter out the noise in this era of information overload and 30-second sound bites that unfairly represent the truth and mislead the general public. And we want to start a grassroots movement to get the public to act in the upcoming elections, to make informed decisions, and elect those that will truly have the best interests of the country and nation at heart, not those of special interests, big business, and signing pledges that impede the spirit of cooperation. We believe this will help to elect government officials that will set the country back on a reasonable path to prosperity and be a leader to the rest of the world. Our goal is to get President Obama reelected and to take back the House and maintain control of the Senate. This is a call to action, as we need to fight back before Republicans completely hand over the government to corporations in about 100 years. We need to mobilize an army of Democratic, independent, and some Republican voters to reverse and stop the current direction of the Republican Party and Tea Partiers. This show and our success will only be possible with your input, ideas, and action. This is a vehicle for us to discuss and share information that doesn't always make the mainstream media. So please don't be afraid to chime into the conversation. You may have information, an idea, or a totally different perspective that we haven't considered, so please share with us. Our call-in number is 646-378-0763. Again, that's 646-378-0763, and press 1 in order to speak, and I'll recognize and bring you on. And I just want to give a shout-out that we have, I go through this mission statement and what we're about, our goals, on each show, because we get new listeners joining in pretty much every week. Now, being listened to in places like France, Senegal, Bahrain, Kuwait, as well as all across the country. So I want to thank everybody for their support, and hope we're filling a niche that is not being filled by anybody else. Okay, on with the topics. We've got a lot to cover, as it's been a very busy week on the political scene. Yesterday was a banner day for elections in Ohio, Mississippi, and several other states. In Ohio, the Democratic mayor of Columbus won a fourth term. The Democratic governor of Kentucky won a landslide reelection. And there were certain issues on the ballot that we were all following that are of critical importance to the Democratic Party, and not only that, but to the people of this country. In Ohio, the anti-union bill eliminating the right for collective bargaining and unions in Ohio was defeated. And I was so glad to see that. That sent a very loud message to not only in Ohio, but Michigan and Wisconsin as well. On the other end of the spectrum, Ohioans voted to have the option to opt out of the Affordable Care Act. Now, that doesn't mean that they will opt out. It just means that they have that option. And Republicans are trying to spin that to say that, you know, they had a victory there as well. But that does not mean, like I said, that they will necessarily decide to opt out of the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act was upheld in the appellate court as being constitutional. So one more step in defeating the Republicans that are trying to revoke the Affordable Care Act. Maine overturned the restriction to register and vote on the same day as elections and voted down the suppressing voter ID bill. That was huge. Now then, on to Mississippi. Mississippi voted down the state's attempt to pass the personhood bill, and that would have declared that life began at fertilization. And abortion, birth control pills, IUDs, and in vitro fertilization. This is a major, major victory, as Mississippi was considered one of the most conservative states in the country, and Republicans were almost certain that the bill would have passed there, which would have led the way for them to move this legislation into other states. The fact that it was shot down there, and some people want to say that it was because of some of the ambiguity of the language, and the fact that it just reached too far, well, guess what? It did. It reached too far. And I am glad not only for the people of the nation, but for women in particular, because it basically keeps the Republicans from trying to go out and overturn Roe v. Wade, and it keeps the right to choose in a woman's hands, not in government. Mississippi did, however, pass the voter ID bill, making it harder for minorities, the elderly, poor, and students to vote in upcoming elections. Arizona. Unseated Republican Senator Russell Pierce, the author of the state's harsh immigration law. So that was a good victory. All in all, I'd say the Democrats made the biggest impact at the voting booth and sent a message loud and clear that we've had enough of the party of no and the party of the rich and corporations. One other victory I'd like to call out, and this is one where I've told people and stressed before, it's important that you get involved in your state and local elections as well. In North Carolina, the Tea Party-backed Wake County School Board, they had a special election a couple months ago, and four or five members that were backed by the Tea Party were unseated at that time. Yesterday, they had a runoff for the fifth seat to get control of the school board, in which the Democrats were successful in taking over that seat. The school board, attempted to segregate the school system by eliminating busing of students, thereby eliminating diversity in the schools. All right, family, sorry about that. We had a little technical difficulty and got knocked out there. I meant to basically give everybody a heads up at the beginning of the show that we've had some difficulty today on the Blog Talk Radio server as far as them having some technical difficulties, so that may have knocked us out temporarily. I do have a caller on right now. Caller 0264. Can you hear me?
Give everybody a heads up at the beginning of the show that we've had some difficulty today. I've noticed on the Blog Talk Radio server, as far as the technical difficulties, that may have knocked us out temporarily. I do have a caller on right now. Caller 0264. Can you hear me?
Hello, caller. 0264 is the last four. Can you hear me?
Hello, caller. 0264 is the last four. Can you hear me?
Hello, hello. Can you hear me out there? Those of you in the chat room, can you hear me? Hello, those in the chat room, can you hear me?
Those of you in the chat room, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello, those in the chat. Can you hear? Hello.
Hello, can you hear me? One second. We're experiencing some technical difficulties. I'm trying to get back to you as soon as possible, people. Just give me one moment. All right. If you can hear me in the chat room, please let me know. And I understand you couldn't hear the caller. So as long as you can hear me, I will continue on. Probably to take all. Okay, as I was saying, and I hope you were hearing me before, as I was talking about the victories that the Democrats won in the elections yesterday, and I'll run back through those real quick because I'm not sure where we had the technical difficulties begin. In Ohio, the Democratic mayor of Columbus won a fourth term. The Democratic governor of Kentucky won a landslide reelection. Issues on the ballot. In Ohio, the anti-union bill eliminating the right for collective bargaining and unions in Ohio was defeated. On the other end of the spectrum, Ohioans voted to have the option to opt out of the Affordable Care Act, but that doesn't mean that they will do that. It just means that if they desire in the future, they can. Along those same lines, the appellate court upheld the constitutionality of the Affordable Care Act, which is a major step going forward. So that's another victory for the Democrats in regards to that. In Maine, they overturned the restriction to register and vote on the same day of the elections and voted down the suppressing voter ID bill, which we've seen basically starting to spread across the country. Mississippi voted down the state's attempt to pass the personhood bill that would have declared that life began at fertilization and would have outlawed abortions, birth control pills, IUDs, and in vitro fertilization. I am really glad that this got through, as that had far-reaching ramifications all across the country, taking away the control and the right of women to choose what they want to do with their own bodies. So I am very glad that this got through. The Republicans thought that they were going to slip one in on everybody, considering that Mississippi is the most conservative state in the country, and they thought for sure they could get this one through. Mississippi did, however, pass the voter ID bill, which is going to make it harder for minorities, the elderly, poor, and students to vote in upcoming elections. Arizona, unseated Republican Senator Russell Pierce, the author of the state's. So another one down. I'll say all in all, the Democrats made the biggest impact at the voting booth and sent a message loud and clear that we've had enough of the party of no and the party of the rich and corporations. The other thing I was mentioning about being involved in state and local elections, in North Carolina, the Tea Party-backed Wake County School Board basically has been replaced. There is a five-member majority now of Democratic school board members, and they basically stopped the attempts by the old school board to segregate the school system by eliminating busing of students, thereby eliminating diversity in the schools. So that was a major victory on the local level. So let's celebrate the victories of yesterday, but then understand that we still have lots of work to do to continue to send the message in 2012. We've got a long way to go yet, so we can't let down. We can't get complacent. President Obama made an announcement and banned what's called government swag, and that's an acronym for stuff we all get. He's cracking down on agencies that are issuing cell phones and laptops that are not needed or go unused to curb travel by federal employees. The White House said the president's executive order directs agencies to stop wasting taxpayer money on non-essential items used for promotional purposes, such as clothing, mugs, non-work-related gadgets. So President Obama's action is the latest executive order he is announcing to show he is moving the federal government along, even as Republicans in Congress are determined to block many of his larger proposals. President Obama is also ordering federal agencies to reduce the number of cell phones, smartphones, laptops, and tablet computers for employees on the ground. Some workers are issued more devices than they need. So the White House has also launched a website called whitehouse.gov/advise. For those wishing to contribute, the president can without the approval of Congress. So if you have an idea, please go to the website and share. Again, that's whitehouse.gov/advise, A-D-V-I-S-E. This past Saturday, the Occupy movement and MoveOn.org organized a Move Your Money Day. Basically, what this is about is taking your money out of these too-big-to-fail banks and move them to credit unions and smaller community banks. And as of this weekend, $4.5 billion, that's with a B, in assets have been moved from banks to credit unions. I've received lots of feedback from people that are making that move, and some of them are having great difficulty in doing so, but they're still making the move. And I encourage people to continue to close your accounts at banks, large banks, and move your money to credit unions and consider trade an internet account that won't have any fees. However, you know, we don't want to do this in a way that is viewed as a run on the bank. That was an organized movement, so the banks were prepared for it. We just don't want to interfere with the confidence of the economic system of the country, as fragile as it currently is. All right. Well, it looks like the big story involving Herman Cain and sexual harassment. Yeah, I'm going to go there. I know you've heard a lot about it in the news already. It's just not going to go away. Now, Herman Cain held his press conference yesterday in an attempt to clear up the charges and allegations of sexual harassment. And I must say, he tried his best to hold to his story, but in my opinion, it doesn't hold water. The fourth woman, Sharon Bialik, has come forward and in graphic detail described what took place between herself and Mr. Cain. The incident she described is actually tantamount to sexual assault. Not only that, but before the conference, Karen Crosshire has decided to come forward and tell her story. Not only that, her attorney, Joel Bennett, has stated that he has been in contact with the other women, and they are looking to put together a conference so that all four can come together to reveal their sexual harassment incidents with Herman Cain. And since then, I understand there's been a couple more that are possibly about to come forward as well. So Herman Cain flat out denied ever having even seen Ms. Bialik. But we all know in this era of technology, there will be a trail that will lead straight to the truth. There'll be hotel dinner receipts, photos of him with Ms. Bialik. Something will turn up, and soon. It has already been revealed that he left the National Restaurant Association 6 months early on his contract, speculation is that he was fired because of these types of actions. The thing that bothers me most on this issue is how the media and Kane's campaign calling them gold diggers, opportunists, digging into their backgrounds to discredit them versus giving them the slightest benefit of the doubt that they are telling the truth. So how is it that four women that have no connection other than being associated with Herman Cain at some point in time would come forward with these stories? They even tried to say a Karen Strassauer filed another claim in another job after she left the National Restaurant Association. Well, she did, but not for what they are implying. She was in a debilitating automobile accident and simply made a request to be able to work from home while recovering under the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. And this was while she was working at the Bureau of Naturalization and Immigration. Acts of this nature need to be taken seriously and thoroughly investigated to the full extent. But part of that investigation is not vilifying the victim. This is why women don't come forward. Innocent until proven guilty. In these cases, that seems to apply to the offender, but not the person offended. It's almost always assumed to be guilty, the guilty party, or have some ulterior motive. One was paid by the NRA and one wasn't, and is not seeking monetary reward. So what does that tell you? Aside from the sexual harassment issues, his campaign still has to answer allegations involving improper campaign financing, that's been kept out of the news for the most part because of the sexual harassment story. With the Iowa primary right around the corner, many didn't realize that he was also on the board of directors for Whirlpool and voted to shut down the plant in Iowa, and those jobs were sent overseas. So pretty soon the other boot's going to drop. With all of that going on, the speculation now is that Mitt Romney appears to be the sure winner of the Republican presidential nomination. This is still so far from the consideration at this point that it's highly unlikely that anything will change between now and January when they start the primary process. It's quite possible that Newt Gingrich may start making some headway, but I really doubt that he would get the nod. So we now have to start targeting Mitt and his shortcomings and get that information flowing in the public. For example, he recently stated in Nevada, a state hit hardest with foreclosures, that we should let the foreclosure process take its course and let those that are losing their homes lose them and have investors then buy them and rent them out. He came out in support of Governor Kasich in Ohio to do away with the unions and collective bargaining for public workers. And we saw the results of that. That was overturned yesterday in the vote. He was against the bailout loans to the auto industry. And Detroit is where he was born. Michigan is where he was born. So, and they're having a debate there tonight about his reception like this. His 59-point plan for the economy, nothing more than a bullet list with no depth of thought behind it. And he is responsible for moving jobs overseas via his Bain Corporation. So tonight, when they're having the debate, and this debate is focused on the economy, we need to be paying close attention to what these candidates are saying. The lies that they're going to tell, I'm sure, about President Obama and his efforts to get the economy going. But we need to pay close attention to the things that they say they can do to fix the economy, because we know that it's just full of so much hot air. The Occupy movement in New York started a march, and that started today, from what I understand. They're going to march from New York to Washington, D.C., and plan to arrive by November 23rd. The reason for the march is they want to make their voices heard on the Bush tax cuts in hopes that President Obama will let them expire. They're due to expire at the end of this month, if I'm not mistaken. So we have got to get involved with this, because it's going to have far-reaching political ramifications. And I think all of us should now start thinking about getting involved with these Occupy movements, because a lot of what they stand for are the same principles and ideology of the Democratic Party and of the people having control of the government, not the government having control of the people, and getting corporations and money out of our elections. So let's see if we can do that. I'm not sure where I found this, but it makes sense to me. It's a list of reforms that someone drew up for proposed changes to Congress. I'm in agreement with it and wanted to share with you and get your feedback, and maybe we can get as a referendum on the ballot. But it's called the Congressional Reform Act of 2011, and it's basically a bulleted document that basically says, in regards to congressmen or our congressional representatives, they should have no tenure and no pension. A congressman or woman collects a salary while in office and receives no pay when they're not in office. Congress, past, present, and future, participates in Social Security. All funds in the Congressional Retirement Fund move to the Social Security system immediately. All future funds flow into the Social Security system, and Congress participates with the American people. It may not be used for any other purpose. Congress can purchase their own retirement plan just as Americans do. Congress will no longer vote themselves a pay raise, and congressional pay will rise by the lower of the consumer price index or less. Congress loses their current health care system and participates in the same health care system as the American people. Congress must equally abide by all laws they impose on the American people. All contracts with past and present congressmen and women are void, effective January 1st, 2012, and the American people did not make this contract with congressmen or congresswomen. Congressmen and women made all these contracts for themselves. Serving in Congress is an honor, not a career. The founding fathers envisioned citizen legislators. So ours should serve their term or terms, then go home and back to work. Now, that's a platform that I can definitely get on board with, because we have people that once they go into Congress, serve a four-year term, they are drawing their basic pay for the rest of their lives, and it shouldn't be that way. If you and I go to work for a corporation for 4 years, we don't get a salary for the rest of the time we're not there. So why should Congress have it any way different? These are reforms that I think everybody in this country should be pushing for. It would make a big difference in the legislation that's coming out that basically is law and guidance for the country. And I just want to go back to, again, we had great election results yesterday, but it's not over. We're far from it. The voter suppression issue is still a big issue. And I just wanted to touch on one thing, because a lot of people just don't, I'll say, aren't getting motivated or getting in the spirit of getting out there. The thing that gives us the right to vote, and when I say us, I'm referring to minorities for the most part, and I'm talking about the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Before that act, we didn't write. It's an act. It is not a law. It has to be renewed on occasion, and the last renewal was in 2006 under then President Bush. It's good for another 25 years. But during the debate over the 2006 extension, some Republican members of Congress objected to renewing the preclearance requirement that the act's primary enforcement provision, arguing that it represents an overreach of federal power and places unwarranted bureaucratic demands on southern states that have long since abandoned the discriminatory practices the act was meant to eradicate. Really? I don't think that the southern states, or some other states for that matter, have gotten rid of those types of issues. Conservative legislators also oppose requiring states with large Spanish-speaking populations to provide bilingual ballots. Congress nonetheless for 25 years with the enforcement provisions left intact. Now, my question is this: why is this an act and not a law guaranteeing citizens the right to vote? What happens if one day our elected president decides he will no longer sign the act, or Republicans get control of all three houses of government? This is why it's important for us to get out and exercise our right to vote in each and every election on the national, state, and local level. Your vote does matter, and it does count. Don't listen to these people that will tell you it doesn't matter. It does. If you don't vote, then you can't complain. If you don't vote, you let someone else decide your lot in life and that of your children and future generations. And along with that, like we've been talking about, these voter suppression laws that are taking place. And I cannot stress this enough. You see, there was strong influence even in the elections last night. Some states have already enacted them, and I'm sure it impacted some of the turnouts yesterday. And there are plenty of states that this legislation is pending, and we have to get things moving and moving quick. Now, week before last, I talked about a report from the Brennan Center for Justice. And in that report, they outlined these suppressing laws, these laws to move to suppress voters, basically will impact over 5 million voters. The one thing I want to stress to people, to go out and talk to your friends, your relatives, your colleagues, your churches, in schools, everywhere. President Obama only won the election in 2008 by a 7% margin. That was 5 million votes. And the Republicans now, the states in which they control, and it's around 34 of those states, okay, they are trying to basically suppress that number of votes so that whoever they're running against him as a Republican candidate for president has a hand up in doing so, in defeating him. We cannot allow this to happen. We have to get out and fight. We have to organize and get people that are disadvantaged to a place where they can register to vote, where they can get an ID, so they can be ready in the fall of 2012 to be able to go in and cast that ballot for President Obama, for Democrats in the Senate, for Democrats in the Congress, in particular, to take back over the House of Representatives, as well as in their state and local elections. We have to get this overturned. Let's continue to send the message from last night. Let's continue to send it loud and clear the rest of the year through November 2012. You know, in the first three quarters of 2011, state governments enacted these laws. And like I said, 19 new laws and 2 new executive actions are in place. 42 bills still pending, and at least 68 were introduced but failed. So it makes it significantly harder for people to register. And understand, if you're into these polls that they show on TV every day, where now they're talking about the 12 battleground states and the fact that they're in a dead heat. And these are states, these are all states that President Obama won in the 2008 election. Some were by a landslide, some were extremely close. We have to volunteer and get out, whether it be knocking on doors, whether it be organizing voter registration drives, with the exception, I'll say, of Florida, because that's against the law in Florida now, and that's something that needs to go on their ballot to get overturned as well. You can no longer organize voter registration drives in the state of Florida. It is against the law. And we have seen in the news where a couple of teachers have been fined simply because they talked to their students about the political process and got them to fill out forms to register to vote. But we need to get this done. We need to figure out, as they do, playing the game to get as many people registered and get them ready to go. You know, there are basically 6 issues when it comes to voter suppression. 3.2 million votes will be affected by the voter ID laws. 240,000 will be affected by the new proof of citizenship laws. There are states where you now have to prove your U.S. citizenship. 200,000 registered in 2008 through voter registration drives can no longer do that. 60,000 voters registered in 2008 through Election Day voter registration. Well, here's one that's already been defeated. Maine restored that right last night. So that's one out of the six that has been knocked down. 1 to 2 million voters who voted in 2008 will be eliminated under the new laws rolling back early voting, because they've cut the time that you can now vote early. And that impacts Democrats more than Republicans. Exercise that option of going to the polls early. And at least 100,000 disenfranchised citizens via executive orders signed in Florida and Iowa. In other words, if you have a past felony, then you can no longer have your voting rights restored in those two states. And that's something that needs to be turned around. So those are the issues that we face in voter suppression, the laws that are on the books. The other game that's being played, well, before I get to that, if you need to register to vote, or you know somebody that needs to register to vote, they can do so online. They can go to gottaregister.com. That's GOTTAREGISTER.com. Gottaregister.com. They can fill out the form, print it out, and mail it in for registration. You have to requirement, then you need to help people that don't have transportation and get them to Department of Motor Vehicle, Department of Transportation facilities to get those IDs made. Now, the one thing you need to address when you go there, specifically ask for the free voter ID, free voter ID card. If you don't, they're going to try to charge you. And that's only, and the only time you need to be charged for it is if you need a driver's license. The Supreme Court made it clear that in those states that require a photo voter ID, it must be made free to folks coming in to request it. But they're playing games in these states, and you need to be aware of that, and you need to specifically ask for the free photo voter ID. And if you want to know what the requirements are for your particular state, you can go to voter.org and look for what's called the Map of Shame. On that map, it'll tell you specifically what the requirements are in your state presently. These things are being updated as laws are getting added to the books. It'll show you the states that are pending right now for some of this legislation. But it'll also show you those states that have already passed it, and so you know exactly what you have to do. That's lawyerscommittee.org, the Map of Shame. The other thing that is going on right now, and I'm sure that all of us have been affected by the 2010 census. Well, one of the results of the 2010 census is they look at the AI land and the populations, where they've thinned out, where they've increased. In other words, where people are moving from and where people are moving to, increases and decreases in the general populations in the various areas around the country. That then impacts the number of representatives that each state gets from a national level. So these states are drawing these redistricting maps as a result of the shifts in population in their various states. That in and of itself is not a bad thing, except states that typically have, let's say, the Republicans are the majority incumbents, then they try to redraw these districts in their favor from a voting standpoint. And both parties are guilty of this. So you have to be on the lookout for this, this redistricting. And what you end up with is what we call gerrymandering. Basically, they go in and try to redraw those districts in favor of the, I'll say, ruling party in power. So in a case where, for example, let's say your governor and your state assembly is majority Republican, then they're going to try to redraw the districts so that their members will be more easily elected in future elections to maintain power and to maintain control. They do that by a couple of means. And under gerrymandering, and two of the main ones are called packing and cracking. And I've talked about this early on when we first started doing the show. And the difference between the two, packing is basically concentrating as many voters of one type into a single electoral district to reduce their influence in the other districts. It's done to obtain representation for a community of common interest rather than to, I'll say, dilute the interest over several districts to a point of ineffectiveness. So what that means is if they have a bunch of voters in an area that are particularly Democrat or particularly Republican, then they will pack those people into a specific district so that they have the majority in that district, but it also then reduces their effectiveness possibly in other districts. If you have a large block, okay, the second strategy is called cracking. And that involves spreading out voters of a particular type among many districts. So, for example, if you have a large body of voters in one district, in cracking, what they'll do is they'll split that district into two, three, maybe even four segments and tie them into other districts where they know they will be a minority in those districts and basically lose the voting. So it's effective because of what's considered to be a wasted vote. By packing opposition voters in the districts, they know they will already win. And by cracking the remainder among districts where they are moved into the minority in those districts. So these are the things that we have to be aware of. By law, because of the past history of certain states, southern states, Texas, and some others, even down to counties in some locations, they have to be pre-cleared. They have to basically go to the Department of Justice because of these past actions and get approval on how they redraw these districts. And in some cases, they get through. They do get approved. As an example, North Carolina's redistricting map was approved. However, it is being challenged in the courts now. NAACP is challenging it because of the way it redistricted and it basically gave more districts this time around to Republicans. In other words, where they have 13 major districts for the national elections, where it used to be 7 districts were Republican and 6 were Democrat, there are now 10 Republican and 3 Democrat. How that was approved on the federal level, I don't know. But like I said, the NAACP is basically challenging that decision. The other thing that is done is what's called prison-based gerrymandering. And prison-based gerrymandering occurs when prisoners are counted as residents of a particular district. And it increases the district's population, but it increases them with non-voters. So population's been, I'll say, somewhat proportionally or evenly in the various districts. But if you end up in a district where you have a prison in your district, then those are voters that you don't have. And the way they can break these things up to dilute the votes, again, you're at a loss. So that's another thing to be aware of. That's something new to me. I had no idea that that type of a thing was going on before until I started actually looking into some of the actions that were occurring under the gerrymandering. it's basically it's basically, you know, others contend that the prisoners should not be counted as residents of their original districts when they don't reside there and are not legally eligible to vote. So those are things that go back and are fought in the courts. You know, some of the effects of gerrymandering is basically a reduction in the electoral competition, campaign costs, because if you know you have a majority of voters in your district that are leaning towards your party, you don't have to spend the money for advertisements or traveling and things like that. You have less descriptive representation. You have, you know, many effects basically that dilute the vote and basically foul up our election system. You know, how can we fix this problem? Redistricting by neutral or cross-party agency. And that's something, for example, California does. Arizona did that this time, but their governor wasn't happy with the redistricting map that the independent third party drew up, and basically decided to fire the independent party. So they're going to come up with their own. Hey, you know, it's Arizona. We can change the voting system. We can change the size of districts and the bodies. We can use fixed districts. And we can use objective rules to create districts. I mean, some of them get pretty, inventive with the way they draw up these lines, as far as sizing up the districts. So that's something we all need to be aware of and get out and make sure we address. Gerrymandering is a big issue, and the voter suppression is a big issue. Let's educate each other. Let's each one reach one and keep on going. Now, last week, I got a request from an individual to read a letter that was sent to him, and I did so. And I said at that time that if anybody had one, they could send it to me at letspeakonit@gmail.com. I have not received any as of today. However, I do have one that I will share with you. It's entitled, "Vote as If Your Life Depends on It, Because It Does." And I would like to share that with you right now. "Family, I'm angry, and to be honest, I'm angry about the fact that a black man has allowed himself to be used as a pawn in the political arena and to perpetuate a fraud on the American public. Herman Cain has no intention in trying to be the president of the United States, and he knows he has no chance in hell of achieving that objective. He has no campaign infrastructure in place in any of the major cities that will be hosting primaries in the coming months. He doesn't even have offices of any type in those states, so if anyone wanted to contact him to attend a political event or for him to speak, they have no one to contact for that purpose. His talking points come from cartoons, parentheses Pokemon, movies, parentheses Rush Hour 3, and his 999 tax plan either came from an employee of Wells Fargo or Citigroup. I prefer to believe the latter. His book, This is Herman Cain, My Journey to the White House, is also a joke. How can you write about something in the past tense that hasn't occurred as yet and hope? Wake up, people, and realize the wool is being pulled over your eyes. He is playing with the minds and hearts of the American people, particularly the far-right Republican Tea Party base, like a fiddle to increase her net worth by keeping them hanging on to her every word, waiting for her to declare her. Sorry again. We've had technical problems. Finally got that resolved, and we're back on. I was in the middle of reading a letter, and I picked up with that letter again. Let me go back to that. It says, "Family, I'm angry, and to be honest, I'm angry about the fact that a black man has allowed himself to be used as a pawn in the political arena and to perpetuate a fraud on the American public. Herman Cain has no intention in trying to be the president of the United States, and he knows he has no chance in hell of achieving that objective. He has no campaign infrastructure in place in any of the major cities that will be hosting primaries in the coming months. He doesn't even have offices of any type in those states. So if anyone wanted to contact him to attend a political event or for him to speak, they have no one to contact for that purpose. His talking points come from cartoons, Pokemon, movies, Rush Hour 3, and his 999 tax plan came either from an employee of Wells Fargo or the SimCity video game. I prefer to believe the latter. His book, This is Herman Cain, My Journey to the White House, is also a joke. How can you write about something past that hasn't occurred as yet and hopefully never will? Wake up, people, and realize the wool is being pulled over your eyes. He is playing with the minds and hearts of the American people, particularly the far-right Republican Tea Party base, just like Sarah Palin played them with a fiddle, like a fiddle, to increase her net worth by keeping them hanging on to her every word, waiting for her to declare her candidacy, but never did, because she realized there was more money to be made right now out of the controversy. Herman Cain's fake campaign upsets me, because once America realizes the joke that's been played on them, it could spur an angry backlash against all blacks in this country and push the race debate to another level. Another aim of the Koch brothers, I'm sure. When he finally does come smashing back to earth, let's see just how much his brothers from another mother will be there to pick up the pieces. You can be sure they are sitting back and laughing their asses off at him. He's like the monkey performing tricks on the corner and made peanuts. For him to blame individuals for not having a job was a real insult, considering he got his first job after graduating college with Coca-Cola, a company where his father worked as a chauffeur for Coca-Cola CEO Michael Woodruff. He is on a book signing selling tour and using mainstream media to help him sell his trash. He is the biggest liar to come on the scene as far back as I can remember. In the meantime, the focus is really being taken away from the real issues of the day and the Republicans' actions taking place in the background, out of focus of everyone. The personhood bills that are sweeping the states in order to circumvent Roe v. Wade. The idea that life begins at conception could have even farther-reaching effects for women. They could not get birth control. They could not have an abortion as a result of rape, incest, and threat to their own life, let alone if they just decided they didn't want to have a child, period. It's their right to choose. Even in vitro fertilization could be one big government controlling their lives. That sure seems like control to me. That smacks of the Chinese government telling their citizens they can only have one child, and they could be fined or jailed if they have more than one child. Sounds like communist doctrine to me. How about the attack on unions and collective bargaining and the huge vote that's about to take place in Ohio this Tuesday? Where's the mainstream media coverage? They would have us believe that the Occupy Wall Street movement is nothing more than a restless mob, and they will get tired and give up after a while. I got news for you. This weekend, 650,000 people moved their accounts from big banks to credit unions. It has been reported that in Colorado alone, people moved approximately $100 million in funds away from banks. Let's have some focus on that. If Congress won't act to control big banks and their risky gambling with citizens' savings, then the citizens themselves will take action and bring down those too-big-to-fail banks. The power is in the hands of the people, and 99% will win. The 1% has awakened a sleeping giant, and we will take back our country. The Republicans, along with the help of corporations via the American Legislative Exchange Council, have enacted some of the most heinous laws in various states by drafting the legislation they want to see become law in order to remove barriers to corporate policy and ways of generating profits. They fed legislators at galas and other extravagant events in order to influence or buy their support to introduce the legislation when they return home. This is why we have polluted air, water, and deregulation of many industries because the Republican politicians have been bought and paid for. They are the large majority of ALEC members. Voter suppression laws we have seen since the Jim Crow era in the 50s and 60s. Their goal is to stop Democratic voters from being able to register in hopes of getting one of their less qualified candidates into the White House. Believe me, there is not one of the candidates in the current field that could or would do much of anything to get this country out of the economic doldrums we are in, nor would they be suited to deal with the many complexities that face us from around the globe. Why it isn't mainstream? Why isn't mainstream media all over the fact that Republicans simply refuse to pass legislation that will help to create jobs for millions that are out of work? You want to help report how many members of Congress are millionaires? And the reason they won't raise taxes is because they themselves are part of that 1% full of greed and don't give a damn about anyone but themselves and their wealthy donors. Help to educate voters instead of just playing your 30-second sound bites, usually taken out of context, to make informed and enlightened decisions when they go to the ballot box next fall. Ask the hard questions and don't let them off the hook when they try to stick to the party line. Make them tell the truth as to why they would rather see millions of Americans suffer rather than do something now that could help, simply because they want to see President Obama lose the 2012 election. Never in my life have I heard members of the Congress and Senate so blatant and disrespectful toward the president as they have toward the nation's first black president. Party tried their candidate elected in and in office, but no one has ever come out publicly and stated their goal is to make the president fail, to make him a one-term president. That is blatant racism. All I can hope is that when November 2012 arrives, this country will see a revolution at the ballot box, the likes of which have never been seen before, and Republicans will be sent packing to the unemployment lines. Well, I guess we've gone over time. Thank you for listening.